Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So good to have you with us as we barrel forward into another glorious week here at the Weekly Worldview. And I was going to start with news of the big government shutdown that was averted. We were going to cover that in detail. But our producers have alerted us not to cover Kabuki Theater here on the Worldview. It's a known ratings killer. And so we're going to leave that aside. But that does remind me. I was at a place of business earlier in the week as the shutdown loomed. I believe it was Friday, as a matter of fact. And I went into the office of the owner of the business where two 20-something young ladies were sitting at the desk with their laptop open. And the one girl... As I walked in, the one girl looked at the other and she said, "Oh my gosh, have you seen this? Have you seen this? The government is going to shut down. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Has this ever happened before?"
She didn't say, "Oh my gosh." Right?
Well, she didn't say, "Oh my gosh," but I'm trying to clean it up for family. You know, we don't take the Lord's name in vain here on the Weekly Worldview. But she said something like, "Oh my gosh." It was very similar to that. And, she looked up at me as if to ask me if it had ever happened before, and I realized that these people were probably toddlers in 1995 when it happened before, and they just had no idea. And I said, "Well, don't worry, young ladies. I mean, can you think of anything that you're going to need from the federal government here in the next few weeks if it does shut down?" And they looked at each other, and they looked a little bit confused. And I said, "Well, I think about what does the government give us? I mean, they take taxes." And she said, "Oh my gosh, taxes. People won't get their taxes back." People won't get their taxes back. And I said, "Well, I meant they take our taxes, but just never mind. It's probably going to be okay. We're not all going to die." So here's a picture of 20-something America brainwashed into thinking taxes is something the government gives you back once a year. And it was just sad. Anyway, we're going to leave off our coverage of the Kabuki Theater in Washington and the government shutdown that was averted. And we're going to go forward into a week, unfortunately, with the federal government fully functioning, including all non-essential personnel, not exempting Joe Biden, as a matter of fact. But let's move on to the real hard news of the day, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go to Mason, Ohio, from the Associated Press. An Ohio man has been charged with a misdemeanor for barking at a police dog. That's right. 25-year-old Ryan James Stevens was charged with teasing a police dog in the Cincinnati suburb of Mason. An officer on the scene reported that when asked, Mr. Stevens insisted that the dog started it. Yeah, the dog started it. 25-year-old, what's that? Right. You know, the dog hurt my feelings. Anyway, all right. Now let's go to news from the war file. This is serious stuff. Crude oil, this is according to Bloomberg, crude oil rose above $112 in New York for the first time in 30 months, and Brent crude topped $126 a barrel on skepticism that Libyan output will rebound when fighting ends. Strikes on Libyan fields by forces loyal to Muammar Gaddafi have ended hopes for a prompt export resumption and may send oil prices toward $130 a barrel. I said $130 a barrel. I left my house early one morning this week, filled up at $3.30 a gallon, came home that evening past the same gas station, less than 24 hours later, it was $3.40. And today, just a few days later, it stands at $3.46. And, well, what more can you say about that? Oh, it stinks, doesn't it? I mean, it's just, well, there you have it. All right. Anyway, I'm worried about inflation. I know, I have friends who tell me, don't worry, it's not going to happen. The government's going to not be able to borrow, and it's going to be good, and I don't know. I've got to drive to Los Angeles, and I'm not looking forward to that. I think gas is over $4 out there. Anyway, but, yeah, what are you going to do about gas price? You got to have it, right? So we'll keep on barreling forward as we move forward into the week. Let's go to the religion file, an oft-neglected file. But we have comments from former President Jimmy Carter. Former President Jimmy Carter made remarks last Wednesday at a gathering of human rights activists and religious leaders from more than 20 countries at his Carter Center there outside of Atlanta, Georgia. Carter said that teaching by, quote, leaders in Christianity, Islam, and other religions, unquote, allow men to beat their wives and deny women their fundamental rights as human beings. Were you aware of this, my dear, that Christian teaching allows husbands to beat their wives? Had you, I'm not sure what church Jimmy goes to, but well, what else did he say? He also said that much of the discrimination and abuse suffered by women around the world is attributable to a belief that women are inferior in the eyes of God. What's up with Jimmy Carter lumping us Christians in with the Muslims in the wife-beating thing? I mean, I'm the first husband to admit every once in a while a wife needs a good smack. I mean, right? No? No, haven't you read? Wait a minute. Haven't you read Ephesians? Wait a minute before you laugh. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25, right? Husbands, beat your wives like Christ beat the church. Remember? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Maybe Jimmy Carter has a newer version of the Bible, a newer translation that we may not be aware of. But maybe he's talking about the way Jesus treated women back in the early days of Israel. Let's go to Numbers chapter 27 and verse 7. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not dare ever let anyone even think about quoting a Bible verse in public. So this notice gives you warning. Fair warning, I'm sorry. I lost my truck. What can I do? This notice gives you fair warning that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. This is from Numbers chapter 27. Then the daughters of Zelophehad came and stood before Moses and Eleazar the priest, and they said, "Our father died in the wilderness, but why should the name of our father be removed from among his family because he had no son? Give us a possession in the land among our father's brothers." So Moses brought their case before the Lord, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "The daughters of Zelophehad speak what is right. You shall surely give them a possession of inheritance among their father's brother, among their father's brothers, and cause the inheritance of their father to pass to them. And you shall speak to the children of Israel, saying, 'If a man dies and he has no son, then you shall cause his inheritance to pass to his daughter.'" And by the way, the Lord there is capitalized. That's Jesus Christ speaking to Moses. So obviously intolerant of equality for women. Well, at least at Jimmy Carter's church. I don't know where Jimmy got all that from. I've searched the Bible to try to find what Jimmy's talking about. And I haven't, to be honest with you, I haven't read the Quran. So I'm not up to date on whether the Muslims say you can beat your wives or not. I know that I think you can have wives, plural, number one. And if you had more than one wife, somebody's going to get a beating. It's probably going to be the husband. All right. Now, let's move on to more serious news. As if that wasn't serious enough. Jimmy Carter saying Christian teaching belittles women when the book of Numbers is one of the earliest recorded religious documents in the history of man that's still extant. All right, let's not go over that again. We know how Jesus Christ feels about women, not so sure how Jimmy Carter feels about women, but we know how he feels about the Jews, and we'll just leave it at that. All right, now, from the politics file, we're going to go to CBS TV in New York. San Francisco apparently has already banned Happy Meals, and now New York City Councilman Leroy Comrie thinks New York City should consider a ban on Happy Meals and similar fast food promotions aimed at kids unless those meals meet certain nutritional standards. Now, by the way, New York City Councilman Leroy Comrie is fat. He's fat, and he admits he's fat.
Well, he's not a kid, right?
He's not a kid. No, but he said he grew up eating Happy Meals and sucking down soda pop, and he's a big fat slob, and so now he wants to, for some reason, he wants to ban Happy Meals in New York City. Penalties, according to the bill offered by this student councilman, Leroy Comrie, penalties would be steep, between $200 and $2,500 for repeat offenders who use toys to sell unhealthy meals. Yeah. Let's see. Comrie said, quote, "It comes as no surprise that these ads and these type of meals are targeted in low-income and minority neighborhoods." Just like Planned Parenthood. Isn't that odd? I wonder if Mr. Comrie has stood up against the nation's largest organization dedicated to the for-profit pursuit of child killing. I wonder if Mr. You know, we'll scan the wires and try to find out where Mr. Comrie stands, or sits on that. He might not do a lot of standing. Not a lot of walking anyways, but haven't heard Mr. Comrie's opinion on Planned Parenthood targeting minority and low-income communities, but he's certainly adamant about Happy Meals. All right. Let's go. Let's continue in the politics file. From the former Great Britain, I'm going to try to do this with a straight face, okay? Straight whatever on the radio. Research funded by the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA. It's in the former Great Britain, you understand. It's from the Reuters Wire. Research shows that new diets for cows and sheep could reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. Yes, yes. Now, agriculture, as you well know, accounts for around 9% of all British greenhouse gas emissions. Farming accounts for 41% of Britain's overall methane emissions, which, Reuters tells us, are harmful to the environment. Methane, yeah, hot gas, yes, harmful to the environment. A statement released by DEFRA said the following, quote, "In the longer term, the benefits gained by changing animals' diets will need to be considered against other environmental impacts, as well as how practical or costly they are for the farming industry to implement," said DEFRA. At which point, I don't know, some clowns got out of a car and honk, honk with a horn. It's like a Monty Python, Benny Hill skit or something. Anyway. The DEFRA meeting did break up, and large government grants were enjoyed by all, and the work wasn't really that hard. And they all retired happily ever after on generous pensions provided by private citizens, slugging away on projects much less secure than the studies of bovine and porcine flatulence. Thank you very much, my fellow citizens of Britannia. So that's not a bad job if you can get it, right? Studying flatulence for cows and pigs. I mean, you got job security there. I mean, it's not. Yeah, that'd be a great job for youngsters. We could have a program to bring the youngsters in to. Have you noticed that you don't have to teach kids that flatulence is funny? It's as if they know it from the earliest stages. Yeah, even our 2-year-old. Is she 2 already?
Not yet.
She's not 2 yet. But even our 2-year-old laughs at flatulence, whether it's porcine or bovine or human. Anyway, it's just funny. I don't know. And it's what's even funnier and sad, really, is that the taxpayers of Great Britain and I'm sure the United States are paying grown men to study bovine and porcine flatulence. So there you have it.
Okay.
Oh, what's that? Oh, yeah, yeah. Maybe they should give them a course on brushing their teeth first.
destruction. Don't you know that you can count me out?
All right. At first, when I heard the intro, I thought, "Whoa, where did that come from?" But they are British.
Yeah. I don't even know how.
No, that was very appropriate. You're doing a fine job. No beating for you today. All right. All right. Now let's move on. Let's move on into the war file. This is from Brussels. Unfortunately, from the Associated Press, NATO has acknowledged last Friday that its airstrikes had hit rebels using tanks to fight government forces in eastern Libya, but said it would not apologize for the deaths because no one told them the rebels had tanks. Yeah, so the British... Well, anyway, Rear Admiral Russell Harding, he's the deputy commander there of the NATO operation, he said in the past... Only Gaddafi used heavy armored vehicles. We had no idea that the rebels had any tanks, so obviously an apology is not necessary. Several misplaced strikes have provoked angry denunciations of NATO by the rebels, and NATO officials have expressed frustration with the rebels. So that's all. It's all going along quite swimmingly there in Libya. Yes, yes. Anything else? Oh, NATO's Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen expressed regret over any loss of life that NATO may or may not have been involved in tanks that may or may not have existed before they were blown up by NATO airstrikes. NATO Secretary General, his name is Fogh, Anders Fogh Rasmussen. Fog of war indeed. Critics of Libyan operations have questioned NATO's limited strategy of only protecting civilians threatened by Gaddafi's troops, rather than trying to eliminate the threat completely by destroying the strongman's regime. So did you get that? That was the Associated Press reporter saying that critics think perhaps NATO should try to eliminate the threat by destroying the strongman's regime. So even the AP reporter can't say it. He can't just come out and say, we need to kill Gaddafi. I mean, could it be any more simple than that, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, I don't have a degree in public policy or foreign affairs, or I didn't go to the war college, but it seems to me that we need to kill Gaddafi. That would at least take us to the next stage. And I think until that happens... Well, the next stage will be muddled and bloody and probably worse than it was before. But there you have it, with the British and the French in charge. And I know last week, or I forget, a while back, I said I'm all for letting the French take this on. And, well, I'm still for the French taking it on. I want to give them a chance to have a successful military campaign to wash away the centuries of embarrassment interrupted briefly, only briefly, by Napoleon, just from a military standpoint. But, well, we'll see how it goes over there with the Brits and the French and the African Union. Now, speaking of the African Union, this from WorldNet Daily, a report obtained from the Student Clearinghouse by attorney Orly Tates shows some shocking evidence. Now, in Barry Ho's memoirs, Barack Obama's memoirs, and multiple speeches, the president has written that he studied for 2 years at Columbia University from September 1981 to May of 1983. And he has admitted that in the summer of 1981, he traveled to Pakistan to visit friends. You know, friends in Pakistan. Happens all the time. You're at Columbia, you get a call from some friends in Pakistan. You go over there for just a weekend. Yeah, wild, crazy time, I'll tell you. But Barry has repeatedly claimed that from September of 81 until May of 83, he resided in New York and studied at Columbia. But, and an even bigger but, Columbia official records show him attending Columbia University for only 9 months, from September 1982 till May of 1983, And Orly Tate's attorney has the evidence. She got the information from the Student Clearinghouse official records. So the question is, where was Barry Ho from September 1981 to September 1982? I don't know. Maybe he was fighting in Afghanistan with the Mujahideen. I just have no idea. Barry doesn't seem like the type who'd actually take up arms, jump in a foxhole. So I doubt he was fighting with the Mujahideen against the Soviets. But it's a possibility because there appears to be a year that's unaccounted for. And right in the middle of that, he went to Pakistan. Anyways, I don't know what it means, folks. It's just something about Barry doesn't add up, you know? Something, and it's, well, it's simple mathematics if you look at 1981 to 1983. But there's a lot of stuff about Barry that doesn't add up. And it makes me nervous for the future of my nation, my family, and Western civilization in general. But you already knew all that. You know how I feel about Barry. Not a fan. No, nope. Don't blame me that Barry got elected. I voted for the black guy. Yeah. Well, I did. No, not... I voted for Alan Keyes. You remember? Yeah. Yeah, and Barry's only half black. So I would have only got a half a credit for not being a racist. But by voting for Alan, I get 100% credit. Because his mama and his daddy was black. Yeah. that's another thing. Who was Barack Obama's daddy? Oh, there'll be some interesting stuff coming out on that. I can't comment on that right at the moment, ladies and gentlemen. But Barry bears a striking resemblance to an African-American gentleman who hung around with his mama. And his name was not Barack Sr. Anyway, we'll leave all that to other hosts. Let's move now into the science, really, file. This is from the Telegraph over in London. And I want to apologize for my throat. My pipes are a little hoarse today because last minute over at Denver Bible Church, there was a situation with the music. The first string has retired. The second string had to leave town, so it fell upon the third string, myself, to play a little guitar and sing a little bit at Denver Bible Church this morning. And I got to admit, I'm a little bit rusty, and I kind of blew the pipes out as I was worshiping the Lord. And as I want to do, I tend to get a little loud and boisterous and all of that. I really tried to take it easy today, but it's hard when you're worshiping the Lord, and it just comes out the way it comes out. You know, so I apologize for the scratchiness in the vocal stylings today for this week. But let's go to the science, really, file from the Telegraph in London. A team from the Institute of Physical and Chemical Research in Japan has cultivated embryonic stem cells in a test tube and then added proteins to trigger them into developing. And were stunned when over 10 days, these embryonic stem cells clustered together and began to grow the optical cup of a retina. A retina, I said. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. The research was done on mouse eyes, so only mouse babies were killed for this particular research. But, the Telegraph tells us, there's no reason why a similar technique would not work on humans, said the experts. By adding particular proteins, these scientists were able to get the cells to build a three-dimensional layered structure reminiscent, that's not a very scientific word, reminiscent of the optic cup within 10 days. The retinal neurons ultimately organized into a six-layer structure closely resembling that of a retina shortly after birth. And they say this could eventually lead to treatments for humans and yada yada and cure this and the crippled will walk and the blind will see and all that. Anyway, so I suppose I can't really come out and say I'm against this particular research since they were using mouse embryonic stem cells. But this idea of crossing that over into humans, well, just seeing words here like the structure was reminiscent of an optic cup and it resembled a retina, I think a retina is probably a fairly sophisticated structure, and anything that's reminiscent or resembling probably won't work. But for some reason, these mad scientists seemed hell-bent on taking the body parts of innocent people who've been killed and then using them to cure older, sicker, more evil people. And it just makes me, it just gives me the creeps, makes my skin crawl, frankly. I mean, if they want to cure RP in mice, I mean, I'm all for it to use this. That's fine by me. But for one thing, I don't know that it will translate into working for humans. And if it does, well, then that's even worse. Because before long, we'll be devouring our young so that our old can see better. And that just, well, it strikes me as just evil. Probably the most wicked and evil thing you could ever think of doing is eating a child so you could feel better. I don't know if there's anything more evil outside of Jimmy Carter's church. I mean, it's just, it's awful. All right, now, let's go to the religion file since we're, well, we've collided and crisscrossed over a couple of religious issues here in the broadcast. This is from the Associated, no, it's not. This is from the French press agency. Satya Sai Baba, who is 85 years old and has devotees in more than 100 countries, was admitted to a hospital in the town of Pitaparthi with lung and chest congestion on March 28th. His condition has since deteriorated. He's now on a ventilator, and he's receiving kidney dialysis. Now, what makes this interesting? Well, Mr. Satya Sai Baba is called a living god in India. He's a living god suffering with lung and chest congestion. Now, I mean, what kind of god is that, for crying out loud? Let's see here. More from AFP. The wild-haired leader has a following of millions in India and abroad, many of whom believe him to be a living god. The guru claims to have performed several miracles, including bringing men back to life. Yeah, and yeah, now that strikes me as something that's godlike. Yeah. Now, his organization funds health and education projects in India, including a string of hospitals. Well, I'm not sure why he needs hospitals.
Yeah.
He's a living God. Do you ever remember Jesus when the blind and the lame came to him? Did he ever send them to a hospital? I don't think Jesus founded one single hospital. But boy, a lot of people got healed. So anyway, this living God is having a little trouble. Apparently, his godlike powers don't extend to his own lungs. And he's probably going to assume room temperature here in the next few days. But don't worry, because he'll be reincarnated. And apparently, according to this article, there's already another reincarnation of another living God, another Swami. And so, don't worry in India. You'll have a living God. He'll be able to take care of everything you need. He'll be able to found hospitals and raise men from the dead, and you'll have no worries there in India, right? There aren't any problems with disease or anything like that in India. No, it's certainly not. So you got nothing to worry about there. Okay, now, from the Reuters Wire, a chain of electronics stores in Idaho and Montana are offering free guns to first-time subscribers for satellite TV service. The Radio Shack and Dish Network dealerships are doing a promotion that has attracted significant crowds. Under the arrangement, new subscribers to a Dish Network package are given a coupon for $135 to purchase a shotgun. A shotgun. So, of course, that begs the question, I know, what's more dangerous, a $135 shotgun or having cultural rotten pornography pumped into your home 24 hours a day by Dish Network?
Hello, hello, grandpa?
It's science!
Come again?
So sounds like a ripoff of a Beatles song. And you know you're scraping the bottom of the barrel when you're ripping off the Beatles. I never was a fan. Well, I was. I remember when I was quite young, I remember my mother had a vinyl record album, Rubber Soul. And I remember playing it, and I distinctly remember asking my mom, is that a girl or a boy singing? And she said, that's a boy. And it turns out it was the Beatles. And seems like I lost interest after that for some reason. Anyway, never got into the Beatles.
I was never a fan of that band either.
Never fan of the Beatles?
No, that.
Oh, Dramarama? Dramarama? Never a big fan? Yeah, well, neither was anybody else, hardly. Well, how many people have even heard of that band? I mean, anyway. All right, let's get back to the... Okay, now we're getting into the justice file. This is serious ugliness, ladies and gentlemen. Prepare yourselves for a report on the state of Western civilization as it circles the drain. From Lakeland, Florida, a Colorado man who wrote a book entitled The Pedophile's Guide to Love and Pleasure has been sentenced to 2 years probation in Florida. As part of a deal worked out with Polk County prosecutors, 48-year-old Philip Greaves II pled no contest last Wednesday to distributing obscene materials depicting minors engaged in harmful conduct. What a ridiculous charge. Distributing obscene material depicting minors engaged in harmful conduct. I mean, talk about splitting hairs. The guy wrote a book encouraging pedophilia. I mean, couldn't we just convict him of pedophilia and have him executed out in the back of the courthouse? For crying out loud. Greaves' self-published book showed up on Amazon back in November. Florida deputies ordered a copy of the book and had it mailed to a Lakeland, Florida address. And once they got the return address, well, they had Greaves arrested, extradited to Florida. They went through all the motions, but apparently Grievous will not be punished. He's serving some probation out there. He'll probably let him come back here to Colorado, where pedophilia is a rapidly growing spectator sport. Where's that story? Well, I suppose I'll get to it later. You'll see what I mean. Now, I ask the question, what's worse? What's more dangerous, $135 shotgun or having Dish Network pump pornography and cultural rot into your house 24 hours a day? Well, they didn't have to worry about that in Armenia for a little while last week. From The Guardian in London, an elderly Georgian woman was scavenging for copper when she accidentally sliced through an underground cable and cut off internet service to all of Armenia. All of Armenia lost internet because a 75-year-old woman was digging for copper. The Guardian reports that Georgia provides 90% of Armenia's internet. Large parts of Georgia and some areas of Azerbaijan were also affected. Wow. She cut one cable. That's like three countries worth of internet. I'll tell you, it's amazing how bandwidth has changed. Apparently, she mistakenly hacked into a fiber optic cable and cut off large parts of Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Armenia. And there was no cultural rot and pornography being pumped into the homes of Armenia for several hours one day last week. The woman is being investigated on suspicion of damaging property. She faces up to 3 years in prison if she is charged and convicted. The woman has been temporarily released on account of her old age. So they think maybe she's not a terrorist. She's just a poor old lady scavenging for copper. One footnote. Pulling up unused copper cables for scrap is a common means of making money in the former Soviet Union. So, I mean, just in case you thought you had things bad here, I mean, at least you're not scavenging for copper, are you? Well, with the price of copper, it could become a regular means of income. Oh, it was.
Like a year ago or something.
Oh, somebody scavenging. Oh, yes, they're stealing copper left and right. Well, that's true.
Cutting like a water line.
My goodness, have we sunk to the level of Georgia?
Armenia?
Are we like Azerbaijan out there scavenging for copper? All right. Well, that's sad. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. There is a big problem. And what it is the price of copper, which is skyrocketing along with the price of gold, silver, corn, coffee, cocoa, sugar. Oh, but don't worry about inflation. I mean, that's just all scare tactics. Don't worry about it. How much was the milk the other day? I remember it was $2.48, and I thought, I'm only going to get 1 gallon because, man, that's a lot for milk. This week, it's $2.60. Anyway, but we're probably just hallucinating.
Not we?
I shop sometimes. I purchased a gallon of milk not less than 10 days ago. All right, let's move on. Oh, I told you about Colorado and pedophilia being a spectator sport. Let's go to 9 News from Lakewood, Colorado. Police say there's a second alleged victim in the case of an Alameda High School girls basketball coach accused of sexually assaulting a child. Yes, Wesley Specht is a 26-year-old man. He goes by the nickname Wild Man, and he's a high school girls basketball coach. So for those of you considering possibly thinking about sending your daughters to the public schools, keep in mind that at Alameda High School, they hire a 26-year-old man to be a high school girls basketball coach. That's just not very wise. That's just ridiculous. You know who should be a high school basketball coach? Girls basketball coach? It should be that Armenian grandma, a 75-year-old woman. Anyway, it should be, well, it shouldn't be a 26-year-old male. I'm sorry. That's just not wise. But anyway, he was hired as an assistant coach back in 2009, back when he was 24 years old. He got promoted when the prior coach was relieved of his duties for inappropriately texting girls on the team. All right. So anyway, you public school bastards will never get your hooks into my kids, you filthy scum, you ignorant, foul heathens. There. Got that off my chest. I'll find a teenage girl to teach my girl how to play basketball. My daughter doesn't need to know how to play basketball, for crying out loud. All right. More from the culture file. Let's go to WorldNet Daily, always a great source for news and information. Cook County Jail in Chicago, according to Bob Unruh. The Cook County Jail has instituted a new policy that assigns men and women to cells in jail based on their perceived gender. Jail spokesman Steve Patterson, we don't know if that's a boy or a girl. We haven't asked Steve what his perception is. But this jail spokesman, Steve, told WorldNet Daily that the policy was put into use the week that it was implemented. And he said there was indeed a transgender detainee who came into our custody that very week. Well, what are the odds? You're running a jail in Chicago and some transgendered freaks of nature come through the door. What are the odds? But listen to this sad story. The spokesman said, this transgendered person had been through some surgical procedures already and self-identified as a woman. Because of the physical changes and self-identity, she's been housed in our female rehabilitative unit where she has access to mental health services. What? How dare he insinuate that someone undergoing sex change surgery and all that would somehow need mental health services. That's an insult to the entire transgendered community. This spokesman, Steve Patterson, should be ashamed of himself or herself, whatever the case may be. He says that's the transgendered prisoner, she is housed alone and showers alone. How dare you force this transgendered person to shower all alone? She should be able to shower with all the other girls or all the other perceived girls. Or maybe if she wants to shower with the boys, what's your problem with that? Are you some kind of sexist against transgendered people? You know, no matter how hard they try, these liberals. Well, if you were in... Of course, I prefer to shower alone myself.
Yeah,
but
well, whatever. It's got a great deal.
Oh. Yeah, maybe it's happy. It's the only one in jail that doesn't have to shower with all the other losers in jail. But it's still an insult. I'm talking about the principle of the matter here. An insult. Treating her differently than anyone else is acknowledging that she's a freak. Whatever is a freak, and that's not nice. Very politically incorrect. All right. Now, let's go to the war file. In a related story, can I pronounce this? Ajabiya, Libya. Okay, let's just say Libya. Dateline Libya. Libyan rebels painted the roofs of their vehicles bright pink last week to avoid more friendly fire casualties. Yes, there is apparently, according to MSNBC, from which we glean this story, there is apparently despondency in the rebel ranks and impatience with the NATO air power that the rebels say has not been decisive against Gaddafi, but it's been fairly decisive against them in that we've blown a bunch of their tanks up, and they're quite upset and a little scared, and so they've decided to paint the roofs of their vehicles pink. That's right, pink. Because the one thing the Muslim rebels know is that the NATO alliance respects diversity above all. So, if a NATO pilot's flying over looking to drop some bombs, and he thinks that the forces on the ground may be gay, they'll definitely be intimidated. They won't say anything, they won't ask, they won't tell, and they won't drop their bombs, because you wouldn't want to kill a homosexual Libyan on the ground. So that's, I got that all from the pink. Did you? Yeah, they painted them pink. Anyway. All right, good. Okay. Now, from the justice file, this is just, anyway, I hate to tell you this, ladies and gentlemen, but from the New York Daily News, a grandmother who stood by while her 6-year-old granddaughter was set on fire in a demon-casting ritual, a voodoo ritual, was sentenced to 3 years in prison last Wednesday. The judge scolded her for not getting the young girl medical attention. So the judge scolded her, gave her 3 years in jail for allowing a child to be set on fire. What do you get in America for that? A scolding and 3 years in prison. The judge said, quote, that child deserved to be cared for and deserved to have her wounds treated, said the judge. Now, if I'm the judge, I might ask, why did you let her set her on fire? Oh, the girl's mother, by the way. The young child's mother, another voodoo priestess, set the child on fire in the presence of the grandmother. This is the story of the grandmother's trial. The judge says you should have treated her wounds. Doesn't bring up the fact that you could have prevented the child from being set on fire. And because you didn't, that's why we're going to execute you. That's the way the story should go, but... Anyway, listen to this, folks. This is voodoo. This is pagan religion. The child's mother poured rum over the head of the child and lit her on fire to drive out evil spirits. The grandmother doused the child with water and then put her to sleep and did not take her to a hospital. Grandma is a native of Haiti, and the child's mother, Marie Laradine, is set to go on trial. On assault and child endangerment charges later in June, where she'll perhaps be scolded as well. Sure, the judge will give her a good tongue lashing before sentencing her to some ridiculous sentence. All right. From the New York Daily News, again, a 92-year-old woman, I'm sorry, let me start again, Clara Tang, is charged with stabbing and bludgeoning her wealthy husband to death in their home in Sydney, Australia last year. She's a 92-year-old woman, and she stabbed and bludgeoned to death her 98-year-old husband after 70 years of obviously less than blissful marriage. She has pled not guilty due to mental illness. Her lawyers say she suffers from dementia and had feared her husband was trying to poison her. Now listen to this. The couple survived both the Japanese invasion of China and Mao's Cultural Revolution before moving to Australia some 30 years ago. And I don't know what to make of this story. I think it's possible that dementia could set in and one's physical capacity for mental capability could become so deteriorated and deranged that you do something crazy like stab and bludgeon your husband of 70 years. I mean, I think it's possible. I just don't know what to make of that story. One thing is, it's just awful. It's just horrible. My darling, if we make it to 70 years of marriage, I mean, I just hope you don't lose it and grab a screwdriver. And,
well,
and
if you stop beating me up.
Oh, that's where the beatings come in handy, see? Keep you in line. She'll be afraid to grab that screwdriver no matter how old I am. She'll remember those beatings.
Maybe
that would trigger.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, maybe he went to Jimmy Carter's church. And after escaping the Japanese invasion of China and Mao's Cultural Revolution, signed up at Jimmy Carter's church and smacked his wife around one time too many. And there you go. Got to get back to the news, ladies and gentlemen. We're rapidly running out of time, and I have, a number of other disturbing, horrible, disgusting, terrifying stories that you should be made aware of as you consider your position in the big picture. What's the big picture? The big picture is your life is like a vapor of smoke. It's here today, it'll disappear tomorrow. Your entire lifespan on this planet is merely a speck in the eternal panoply of history, and you need to prepare for what comes next. And in order to do that, you need to be aware of what's going on around you, aware of what has happened in the past, and aware of who is the creator, who wrote the rules, and who will judge the destiny of your eternal soul. And I'm here to posit that that man is God, is Jesus Christ. And you better look into it, ladies and gentlemen, because you're going to meet him. Case in point, from Tacoma, Washington, from the Associated Press, a 5-year-old boy found dead in a Washington home died of asphyxiation with a plastic bag over his head, and bruising on his body suggests he had been abused before. His body was found after his father, David Stewart, shot and killed himself after a high-speed chase on I-5 near Olympia, Washington. The boy's mother, Christy Samples, was also found dead in the car of a gunshot wound. The coroner has ruled her death a homicide. Investigators aren't sure who killed the boy. What does it matter who killed the boy? Doesn't matter to any of these three people involved. But this is a case that God will sort out. As he will every case, as a matter of fact. Still not sure if O.J. did it? Well, on Judgment Day, you're going to find out. Who killed the Kennedys? Well, God will sort it all out for you. But you better be in his good graces when it comes time. And it's pretty simple to get in his good graces. He's offered you the opportunity to live with him forever. Just believe on his son. Believe that Jesus Christ is who he said he was, is who he said he is, did what he claimed to have done in the scriptures, and believe that God is offering you the opportunity to believe and live with him. And if you'll simply believe that fact, you don't have to change your life, you don't have to change your lifestyle, you don't have to change your friends, you don't have to change anything. Just believe that simple one little fact, and you'll be saved from the fire that is surely coming. Because surely the Lord can't tarry much longer in the face of such horrifying daily events here in the country that was the last great hope for liberty and prosperity and peace and domestic tranquility on the planet. How long, O Lord? How long, O Lord, will you wait? Another story from the Associated Press. From Opelika, Alabama. The first thing I want to do is comment on the grammar in the opening line of the story, and I apologize, it's an aside, it's a serious story, but I simply have to point this out. Dateline Opelika, Alabama. A shooting at an East Alabama community college killed one woman, wounded two others, and injured a child. A shooting killed one woman. Might I remind our good friends at the Associated Press that a shooting is not an animate being that can be blamed or really cause anything. It's a killer. A killer at an East Alabama community college last Wednesday killed one woman, wounded two others, and injured a child. Police have a suspect and said the gunfire resulted from a domestic dispute. The gunfire, yeah. Officers are still trying to sort out the details. A dispute between a man and a woman appears to be at the root of it. And the East Alabama Community College did close the campus for the rest of that school day, but since there were only just two murdered here and a suicide, you know, it's hardly enough to close the school down. I mean, all right, now let's move over to Holland. From the domestic tranquility file from the Daily Mail in London. A gunman opened fire with an automatic weapon at a crowded shopping mall outside Amsterdam on Saturday, leaving at least 7 people dead and wounding 15 others. The attacker was among the dead after fatally shooting himself at the Ridderhof Mall. An interesting quote from Rod Cupers, a 50-year-old project manager who lives there in Holland, said Rod Cupers, he said, "You hear about this sort of thing happening at American high schools, and you think that's a long way away. Well, now it's happened here in the Netherlands." So can you believe this? A killer opens fire and slaughters and butchers people in a town. And what do the townspeople hearken back to? Oh, that only happens in American high schools. Well, that's where we are, folks. America's legacy. The world's inheritance from America. High school shootings. Let's see. The killer had long blonde hair, appeared to be about 25 years old, wore a leather jacket with camouflage pants. So, I know, you hear something like this and you think it could be secular humanism, it could be Islam. Which is it? Well, in this case, it seems like just another secular humanist kid brought up in the evolutionary worldview and, as a result, has no respect for his own life or other people's lives and just wants to be famous. More than likely secular humanism involved in that particular shooting. Let's go to Rio de Janeiro. At least 11 people, mostly children, died last Thursday and more than 15 were wounded when an armed man attacked a school at Relengo, a poor suburb of Rio de Janeiro. The attacker, a 24-year-old former student at the school, was among the dead after shooting himself in the head. A police colonel said the attacker was friendly as he went into school, chatting with administrators and teachers, asking for permission to address the children. When he reached the third floor of the building, he entered one of the classrooms and started to shoot at the students, killing 9 girls and 1 boy. Brazilian President Dilma Rousseff is quoted as saying he was in shock over the killings. That's according to a government spokesperson. Folks, you don't want your president to be in shock when something terrible happens. You want your president to be steely-eyed and ready to solve the problem, to bring the killer to justice, to get to the bottom of the case, and to prevent such things from happening in the future. The last thing you want to hear is that your president is in shock over this. Now, it's okay for you and I to be shocked, but the president shouldn't, or at least he shouldn't admit he's shocked. It's just bad form. A sister of the attacker told a Rio de Janeiro radio station that in recent months, the killer appeared to have, quote, gotten closer to Islam. So Islam giving secular humanism a run for its money in responsibility for bloodshed and wanton death and slaughter all over the world. Islam running a close second to secular humanism. All right. Dateline Lakewood, Colorado, from the Culture File. The mother of an 8-year-old boy pepper sprayed by suburban Denver police as he threw a violent tantrum at his elementary school said last week that she wishes authorities had chosen to talk to her son instead. Police in Lakewood say they pepper sprayed the 8-year-old little monster, Aiden Elliott, twice after he refused to drop a piece of wood, a sharp piece of wood, that he was trying to stab them with. Pepper spray. An 8-year-old kid. You should see this kid, too. Well, I'm sure you have. He's been on TV all over the country. This poor little kid is a complete monster. His mother's completely at fault. His mother, Mandy, said she wants police in Lakewood to get special training in dealing with children. I think, Mandy, I think you need some special training in dealing with children. Anyway, I recommend a book to you, Mandy. It's called Train Up a Child. Mandy needs help. All right, from the Justice File, Boulder, Colorado. A man arrested in the death of a University of New Hampshire football player last month will not face the death penalty. Kevin McGregor shot and killed Todd Walker, but the district attorney says they will not pursue the death penalty after consulting with the police and the victim's families. This family was on the local news the other night. They said they could not go through a 20-year ordeal to see the death penalty implemented and that it just wasn't worth it to them to execute the person who murdered their beloved son. What a sad state of affairs for justice in America when the victims can't tolerate the system as it victimizes them once more and steals justice away. All right, one more. From the Reuters Wire, after residents in the southwestern German city of Eppelheim complained that teenagers always sit on top of benches rather than on the seat, and they put their shoes on the seat and dirty the benches, well, the mayor came up with a great idea. The first of Mayor Moreland's benches, new bench design, was installed last week, and he's already getting calls from other cities who are interested. These park benches put the seat up on the back of the park bench so the kids can sit on the back. The mayor calls the benches no-interest benches because teens have no interest in following etiquette, and they sit on the new benches like sparrows on a branch. In Germany, a country reputed for its orderliness, putting your shoes on a public seat often earns a quick rebuke from a passerby. In fact, in one extreme case, a 69-year-old pensioner wounded an 18-year-old man with a knife after the teen would not take his feet off a seat on a train, but in the city of Eppelheim, the mayor has surrendered. Instead of building better teenagers, the Germans are building park benches to accommodate unruly, undisciplined children. And well, there's Western civilization in a nutshell for the week, folks. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at American Right to Life, and at Personhood USA. And I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.